Hi, everyone. It is Steven Schleicher. Welcome to a new episode of Critical Hit. So glad that you're here. So glad that you're looking forward to the weekend and new episodes of Critical Hit. I think I want to take this time and tell you a little bit about a new show that we've just launched at Major Spoilers called Finally Friday. When the week is done, how's that song go? When the working week is done, girls just want to have fun. Well, when the working week is done and you want to go where everybody knows your name. No, that's not right either. When you want to just relax and kick back and reflect on the week that was and share a story or two, then that's where you need to head, is to Finally Friday, our newest show in the Major Spoilers podcast network. You can catch it on YouTube. It is a video show. It's one of those things that we're doing to increase new content for you. And then every Friday, you can call in and share your stories. It's a lot of fun. We just did our first episode this week, and I hope that in the future, if you're a big fan of Critical Hit and a fan of Major Spoilers, that you will want to take the time and share some of your stories, because we want to hear them from you. You want to take the time and share your stories over at Finally Friday. Also want to take the time and talk about HelloFresh. You know how it works. Every week, their chefs create delicious recipes. You pick what you like, and then they send you the exact farm-fresh ingredients straight to your door. There's no need to worry about missing something at the grocery store or not having an ingredient on the shelf, because HelloFresh sends everything directly to you. It takes only 35 minutes or less to make a delicious meal for you and your family of four, and it costs less than, and oftentimes right around, $10 per person per meal. It's quite a deal. Go check it out, HelloFresh.com, and when you use the checkout code MAJOR50, you're going to get 50% off your first weekly delivery. That's HelloFresh.com, checkout code MAJOR50. We thank them for supporting us and Major Spoilers and this installment of Critical Hit. Speaking of, we better get to it, because we know that you have questions and we have answers. It's Critical Hit. Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Oh, you hear that, Rodrigo?
What?
It's the mailman.
Oh, hello,
and he's dropped
mailman.
Off a bunch of mail for us to go over a mailbag this week.
Email does not make a sound, Steven.
It does. Mine comes in and goes, ding, ding, you've got mail.
No,
you don't have mail.
It does. Wait a minute, Mr. Ding Dong.
Actually, I used to have a, for some reason, celebrities used to record the You've Got Mail stuff, and yeah. I had a Charisma Carpenter one where every time I'd come in, You've Got Mail.
I had a Muppet CD-ROM, and I had, I want to say Miss Piggy, tell me that I had mail.
Yeah, it's awesome. Matt from Ohio says, greetings all. First, thanks for the hours of free 4E. I don't get to play D&D these days, but your podcast gives me some of the fixes that I need, so thanks. I was wondering if you could speak to the inter-party roleplay conflicts that the Torkeltones have been through. Ket disappearing during the Celestial Crusade, Ket and Trell at Basalt, Tork and Trell in the Everdeep, Ket and Orm arguing over the totally unremarkable flaming longsword, everyone versus Ket in the Mootlands. I'm sure more conflicts have cropped up by the time you read this. Some of these conflicts are a bit uncomfortable to sit through. Can you offer any insight into these situations? Well, first of all, I would say that I think those are just character situations, so I don't think that there's any malice between the actual players and that.
I would say, at least specifically with Rob and I, we enjoy, as players, we enjoy in-character conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Also, our relationship is built on the fact that we hate each other.
And yet you live together.
Yes, I mean, that's why it works.
Randus, not even
but
conflict Randus between Ket, us.
Yeah, but Randus Ket just, conflict is rare.
No.
Because you guys are just role-playing like, the characters.
We like characters, you know, when characters have, you know, conflicts.
Well, real people have
it makes it...
Real people have conflict, right? I mean, conflict happens all the time, and sometimes it is uncomfortable, but you got to work through it. And for most of the time, I don't know if there's any... I mean, I'm sure there's some... solution to some of the conflicts that we've had. I mean, it seems to be, we understand each other, but I don't think there is, there's still that thing maybe in the back of some of the characters' minds of, is this person going to do that again?
Yeah.
Having been in a couple of these situations, I can say that I hold no ill will to any of the other players. And I get this question a lot because of the interaction that Rob and I have. And I've explained this before. Rob and I, basically, we occupy the same archetypical space in different peer groups. So when we come together, Rob and I kind of butt heads because we're used to being that same guy in the group. We're used to being the funny, snarky bastard in the corner. And so when I'm like, Rob's stupid, I'm not saying Rob is stupid. I like Rob. Rob is a really, really great guy. But I give him hell because Rob likes to needle me. And I think, I hope vice versa.
Rob's just generally antagonistic.
Yeah.
That's kind of what he's saying, is that both of us are kind of generally that way. Just
we definitely have that. I've never had a fight-type, conflict-type argument interaction during Critical Hit that involved Matthew's feelings. Torque has had some interactions that may have sounded really, really, really realistically angry, but that's because we have a very good dungeon master and some very strong player characters butting heads occasionally who know what they want. The characters know what they want. And there are times when I'm like, I should back away from this, but Torque doesn't want to.
Yep.
So, from my standpoint, I specifically generate situations that are going to bring the characters into conflict, because that is kind of, to a certain degree, how you define those relationships, right? You define the relationship with the people you care about, you know, partially with what you have in common, but also partially with what you don't have in common, what you disagree on. And in order to flesh out the characters, I have to generate that conflict. The part of the issue, though, with a role-playing game, is that nobody's actually writing it. You know,
I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Right, right. So nobody's actually in control of all characters.
Yeah.
Yep.
So a lot of these conflicts are and will forever be unresolved in any given specific instance. You know, you might have a thing where, like, any two characters are like, you know what, you're okay too, but the individual thing that they were arguing about won't get resolved because it happened a year ago for the characters and 6 years ago for the players, and you just kind of move on. In that sense, role-playing games can be a lot like real life.
Yeah.
In that it's kind of, you're taking on your character's role, but it is kind of real people arguing. Not everything's going to be upfront. Not everything's going to be cleanly worked out in 30 minutes.
There's not necessarily going to be a monster that represents that personal issue that gets resolved by the end of the episode.
Because even as a game master, even if you are like, haha, I will put in a monster that specifically does that, the players won't get it. The players will circumvent the situation. Another player who is not involved in that argument will defeat the monster. Like, you just can't plan for it.
And in a group of five players, there are, what, 10 or 12 different interrelationships to play with, to where, you know, Trell and Aurum is a relationship we don't necessarily see a lot of. You know, we will see Randus Ket, we will see Ket Aurum, but when you get to the point where you get to an odd pairing like Torque Ket, and Torque Ket's interaction, because of the way the characters are being played and because of the players playing them, it has a different reality to it. And I think sometimes people read antagonism into that one specifically, the Torque Ket relationship, that really isn't there on the part of Torque and Ket or the players. But it, you know, it's interesting to see how much the characters bring to those interactions. I think, however that sentence began.
Adriana, do you have any thoughts?
Please say I hate you all. That's what I wanted to hear right there.
Well, I think in the last mailbag we did, Rodrigo mentioned my empathy. And it's interesting having to, like, okay, my therapist is like a 60-year-old woman. And so I've had to explain what Dungeons and Dragons is, one, and what a podcast is to this woman. And then explain, like, okay, this person's an elf. And I just feel so bad for her, but she's such a trooper. Because there can be like frustrating scenes where you're like, is the player listening to me or is the character not listening to me or did they mishear me in this situation? Because you are having like an argument, and all the problems that you have with a fake argument, that you have with a real argument, you also have with a fake argument. Mm-hmm. And things do get frustrating. But it's just stuff that you have to like work through because it's a game. And that you have to like work past if there's a problem. But yeah, again, how did that sentence start?
Yep, you and me both, man.
Well, and the thing is, when you are arguing in character, there's an additional filter, right?
Yeah.
It's not just the two characters arguing, it's somebody driving the character while that character argues. So then when you receive the argument from the other party, you have to synthesize it in your own brain, then mm-hmm. kind of decide, how is this character going to do it? And yeah. any number of things can go wrong along the way.
Uh-huh. Also, we're doing this for an audience.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And part of, I would say, like, what can be a bigger issue is, like, people not being able to differentiate between us and our characters.
Yeah, yeah, that's real problematic.
Or, mm-hmm.
It's not even arguing. I mean, we had that question a long time ago. It was like, do Stephen and Adriana have a thing just based on our interactions on the show?
Do Stephen and Trell have something?
Yeah. Stephen and Adriana have a thing.
Yeah. And I think that there is a tendency to read into the, lack of a better word, performances that we are given,
mm-hmm.
that each of us is giving rather than given. But I, again, the only person here that I would ever hold any ill will against is Rodrigo, and that's because I hate how good he is at his job.
Yeah.
Seriously, I say this,
Matthew,
and I say this, and he blows me off.
So full of love for Rodrigo tonight.
Well, and this is the thing.
So sweet.
It is inspiring to be a part of a game like this. And I think that there are times where I've gotten through a game and I've said, did Torque step too far? And then I said, wait, this is Torque. Torque may not, you know. And there was one situation where Torque went too far, knew it, and actually had to address it. And that was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to try and do in the game. But it was something that I felt played out well. And I feel like if you watch the really, really wonderful things that you love to watch when you're me, you know what I love about Firefly? I love the fact that you can't trust Jane.
Yes.
I love the fact that Mal and Inara are constantly fighting. I love the fact that you get to a point where some guy is trying to give Zoe a choice. She's like, save your friend or your husband. Oh, I'll take my husband.
Yes.
Did I break your concentration? Those moments are all based in character, and some of them are frustrating, some of them are infuriating, and I think that makes for the best part of the story in a lot of ways.
Daniel says, I own all the 4E handbooks, and for the love of Talos, I cannot find the Artificer anywhere. I do not have an insider account because I can't be bothered to bother my parents, PS I'm 15, to get me one. So where's the damned Randus?
Eberron
Player's Handbook. Player's Guide, yeah.
Sadly, there wasn't any extra stuff made for the Artificer too much.
Yeah, because the Eberron book came out after the Arcane Power book.
Yep.
And there is no Arcane Power. Marital Power is the only one they got a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Marital Power.
I love all the characters and their backstories. Pretty Boy and Poke agree.
Mm.
What is the best way for me to grab some rules, maybe grab a pre-set up campaign to get us started in the swing of things, says Tori, who is starting from the ground up, level 1, with all of his friends. I see starter sets for AD&D at the local Hastings Entertainment and on Amazon. Are those the way to go, or is it better to pick up the current player's guide and DM guide to get started? The box set seems more like a fancy board game to me, and I'd like to start from the beginning as a world-building experience for the boys.
In that case, you probably do want to pick up the
base three.
Yeah, the three core rule books, so Dungeon Master's Guide, Player's Handbook, and Monster Manual. As far as how to get started, there are level one adventures out there. So I would recommend picking one of those up, if not to run, then just to look at, just to see how they structure mm-hmm. the adventure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here's one specifically for Adriana.
Oh.
It is from Nate. And this is funny, because we were just talking about this before we started recording the show, and knowing that we don't pre-plan anything here.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Not sure where you go for Magic the Gathering, and it's really freaked and it's really freaked up that you had that experience. Oh, I think they're talking about that experience that you had when you went to Magic the Gathering.
That bad draft.
Yeah, I personally can't really get into Magic the Gathering. However, two of my sons do. I realize that it's probably a bit of a hike for you, and he's in Olympic. Let's see, he's in Lacey.
Olympia?
He's in Lacey.
Where?
Lacey.
I don't even know where that is.
Gabby's Olympic cards and comics in Lacey.
It's halfway to Panama City.
Yeah, so basically he's saying, don't put up with that crazy crap from those people. Go up to Lacey, and there's a lot of people in this, a lot of places in the Seattle area where they won't put up with that stuff either.
Oh, yeah. I am very lucky to live in Seattle where there's lots of gaming and lots of girls that game and lots of progressive people that game. That was just a bad experience that was not tied to any kind of, they were just like coworker acquaintances of coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Hasn't ruined your love of Magic the Gathering, though, right?
No. And there's a really great place in Seattle called Card Kingdom. You might have heard of it from the internet because a lot of people sell cards to them and buy cards off of them. And so they actually have a store in Seattle. And I went to the not the Theros release. What's the other one?
Born of the Gods.
Born of the Gods release there. Had a great time. Everyone's so sweet. Very diverse crowd. Very fun. I've had some bad luck, but I know that that's not
universal.
Universal. And again, I'm very lucky to live in a place that I think that my experience was hopefully not par for the course in this area.
Yeah, I hope not either. Seattle seems really nice.
Yeah.
You know where it's fun to play games?
Huh?
Gatekeeper Hobbies, Hunt, Tune, Engage, Topeka!
I'll send him a bill. Gordon says,
this is
Settlers
of Card Kingdom. That was a pretty glowing endorsement.
Gordon says,
they gave us pizza!
Checklist time. Awesome. Love you guys. Hope Brian rolls better. Trill is adorably lethal. Curse you, Ket, and so on. All right, now that that's out of the way, I have a question. And so we've kind of already answered this question in the previous one, but I just wanted to kind of get out from Gordon's background and experience. He's been playing D&D since he was 11. My dad would run Advanced D&D 2nd Edition with me. When I was high school, I started 3.5 and loved it. Now, it's been a while. Most of the books are gone. After listening to you guys, I want to get into the 4th Edition, but I don't know where to start. I don't know what books I need with titles like Lords of Where the Wild Things Are, and there are some things like 35-4 e-books now. It's too confusing to jump into with all the low initiative. Can you help a nerd out?
I think,
and I agree with you because I have, I don't know, 20 of them.
You basically have a choice to make at this juncture. Do you want to play pre-essential stuff or post-essential stuff? If you want to play pre-essential stuff, you'll end up with characters that have lots of powers, which may or may not be a good thing, depending on how overwhelmed you get. But pre-essential stuff is the way that the critical hit characters are. You can choose post-essential characters, which will have much narrower power choices, but also a lot more like kind of free-floating features to build your character with that are just going to continue on. Again, the critical hit experience is pre-essentials. Post-essentials, we can't speak too much to necessarily how it plays because I certainly haven't played too much of it. If you want the pre-essential stuff, you look for the Player's Handbook, the Dungeon Master's Guide, and the Monster Manual for 4th edition.
The Monster Vault is a reasonable substitute.
Yeah, actually, I actually would recommend that instead of the Monster Manuals, you get the Monster's Vault.
Yeah.
If you want post-essential stuff, then get the Heroes of the Nenter Vale. Actually, I don't know. I don't actually remember what the essentials guys are called.
I forget as well. I mean, there's the Nenter Vale Monster Vault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Threats of the Nenter Vale, I think.
But I don't think they made any other Nenter Vale books.
Yeah, sorry about that. We're not all that well-versed in essentials. Lastly, if you are willing to shell out the $70 a year, a good way to go about it is to get on Insider. Then you can use the character builder to make whatever characters you want. You're not going to have the books in front of you, so it's going to be a little bit trickier to pick things and to look ahead. I mean, you're going to see a sea of feats, like so many feats, but it's going to be almost impossible for you to pick and read through all of them. But there are ways for you to narrow them down. There's like little clickers that you can click on that will like narrow things down for you a little bit. But if you do that, you will actually have access to both essentials and non-essential stuff. You can pick between them or add things or take away things, and it'll calculate all your stuff for you. So I would actually, regardless of which direction you go, I would actually strongly recommend Insider. The character builder can be a pain in the butt. It's not a very robust program, but it's also can be extremely helpful taking care of all the minutia.
Brian says, it's that time of year when I donate to the podcast I listen to. I couldn't find the donate button on your website. Well, here's what you need to do, Brian. Members.majorspoilers.com and sign up for the $2, the $5, or the $10 a month recurring donation. If you want to do it one time, you can contact me directly, and that's what I told Brian. If he only wanted to do a one-time donation, we could do something specifically for that. But we're encouraging people to become our VIPs and get some extra stuffs.
Yeah, on the Major Spoilers podcast or website, it'll say become a VIP, and that's basically how you donate to us.
And I'll sing your name at some point.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. That's just Brett saying you guys are awesome.
Thanks, Brett. Yay.
Thank you, Brett. I'm a 30-something gamer, says Josh, who's played D&D his whole life and who finds your podcast to combine all the best elements of fun and storytelling, my best games ever. And I'm such a huge fan. Kind of ties right back into this. I'm a huge fan and would like to help support your podcast, but I'd like to get something when I give, you know? What I'd really like to do is buy your awesome t-shirt designs, but sadly they only go up to 3X. I happen to be 4X, so I can't. We don't have any control over the shirt size, although /loot.com, where we sell our t-shirts through, are changing things all the time, so you might go back and check. I mean, this is several months ago when you wrote in. You might check. Sometimes it can do a special order for you if you need a size larger than 3X. And again, if there's one, it says, if there's one group I expected to not discriminate against huge fat people, it's you guys. It's just what that company is able to do with their t-shirt sizes. But I do remember John telling me that they can sometimes do some other sizes depending. So just reach out to them. They're really great people over at /loot. So there you go. Critical Hit Mailbag. I'm currently running a game based around the Critical Hit universe, and I was wondering, do you have plans, Rodrigo, of releasing a comprehensive list of what monsters are and what they are in the Monster Manual?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm really not planning on doing that at all. I've used so many monsters and not at all kept track of them that that would be a task almost equal to Critical Hit at this
every
point.
Monster is a bullet. Level 6.
Every monster. It's amazing what it can do with reskinning, reflavoring.
Aaron says, any of y'all heard of the Advanced Player's Guide by Ari Marmel?
Heard of it. Don't know what it is.
It's pretty good in my honest opinion.
I have not.
The Advanced Player's Guide?
That's what it says, by Ari, A-R-I, M-A-R-M-E-L-L.
Is that the one with the
Penny Arcade guys on the front cover?
Maybe.
Oh.
That's all he asks.
If yes, then yes, I have heard of it, but no, I have not looked it up.
At it.
Do we have that?
No.
I don't.
Do we own this?
I don't.
I sure don't.
Okay.
Quick Google's just bringing up the Pathfinder supplement.
So no, we don't know. We're not familiar with it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let's see. Just wanted to say I recently found this site via the Frog Pants Podcast Network, and I've completely fallen in love with the Critical Hit Podcast, says George. I work overnight stocking shelves, and podcasts are basically the best friend for those 9-hour shifts. I love how many hours of back issues I have to go through, and that the game is still going. So, fanboying aside, I'm really enjoying this adventure, and thank you for the free entertainment. Your hard work is appreciated. Well, we enjoy creating entertainment for you, and we want to continue to make more entertainment.
Yeah.
That's why we've got, 10 podcasts? So, George, if you're looking for something other than Critical Hit, you've got the Major Spoilers Podcast, if you're into general pop culture-y comic book stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Dueling Reviews, where Matthew and I sit down and we review a brand new comic that comes out that week. We generally try to do it on Wednesdays, unless we're recording a Critical Hit, in which case it comes out on late Thursday. If you're into film and film analysis, film theory, we have a show called Zach on Film, where we try to educate a young lad on film theory and try to help him and make him watch a bunch of old films. We have Munchkin Land, if you're into a tabletop game. That's where Rob kicks our butts every week, and Rodrigo occasionally slides in there and puts Zach and I to shame.
I think Rodrigo's won most of the last few.
I don't think so, man. I'm still waiting for somebody to send me a stat sheet, but I'm going to bet that you are far ahead of everyone else, even in recent episodes. If you took the last 10 episodes that we've done, I'm going to bet that you've won 6 of them and Rodrigo has won 4 of them.
That's probably also because
you weren't there for
out of the panel. I'm missing from Munchkin Land the most.
If you like top 5 lists, if you like countdown lists, we do a show called Top 5.
I love me some top 5.
I do love.
Let's see, what else am I missing from our core? Of course, Critical Hit you're listening to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then if you're into other specific things, we have some other great podcasts in our podcast network of people that we've kind of brought on board. One of them is Wayne from Wayne's Comics. Mm-hmm. He does a weekly interview show where he interviews comic creators. And then there's something that comes out twice a week, although it's kind of been fluctuating a little bit. I know James has been having some problems getting his equipment and some other things going. But he does a thing called the Magic Minute, which is really cool. If you want Magic the Gathering explained in 1-minute chunks, he's got them. He's got about 67 of them, I think, so far on our network that you can download and listen to. If you're into toys and merchandise, Zach has started a new podcast called The Want List Audio Edition.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a video version of that you can find over on our YouTube channel at Major Spoilers Video. We'd appreciate everyone to subscribe to that. And then, Adriana, are you guys still doing Super Future Friends?
No.
That's how you're supposed to do it.
38 episodes.
They are great episodes. Go and look it up.
Super Future Friends.
I wish I could find ways to make you two sit down and record shows, like free up all your time so you can just record that show. Because there's 50,000... There's 50,000 Legion of Superheroes.
I'm going to hire Stuart Eminem to draw our comic. And then hire a bunch of other robots to do Kristen's job.
There you go.
And then, I don't know, like a dog in a hat to do my job.
Yeah, no, I mean, you guys do great work on everything that you do outside of Critical Hit. But if you do want to check out their Super Future Friend stuff, even the archive stuff is really great to listen to if you're into Legion of Superheroes. And
even if you're not.
I think that's everybody, right? Is that all of our shows? Am I missing one?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure that's it. So a lot of stuff that we're generating. And we love generating it for you. I mean, we wouldn't be here at 12 a.m. recording an episode for you guys if we didn't love it. My wife and I have been longtime fans of the show, says Anthony. Today I was busy listening to episode 191 while at the same time checking out the ISSUU publishing website. I have no idea what the ISSUU publishing website is.
Issue.
Okay, that's one that I hate.
I think it's supposed to be pronounced issue.
Issue, yeah. I'm a composer, and a friend of mine had posted some of his scores there. I went to check out the site. All the while, episode 191 was playing, thought it was cool, and decided to make a profile and upload one of my scores to see how it would look. So he sent a link to that. So I will forward that to you guys.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's see. We're almost. I mean, this is a pretty short episode. We have. Oh no. I'm sorry. I got to scroll down.
Well, that's it.
Not even close.
Oh darn.
My group just finished a pre-gen, and I ran, and I went over our. Oh, and it went over our allotted 3-hour time limit. More than I care to admit. I'm starting a campaign that I wrote soon, and I'm not sure how to be more reliably manage our time. How to more reliably manage our time.
Seed yourself a fair chunk of ending points so you can end the campaign when you need to, especially if the time limit is there for it, it needs to be really strict. You want to have as many exit points for the session as possible.
Yeah. And just pause and pick it up later. I mean, you just kind of have to do that. You know, other than trying to keep the players on track and talk to your players about staying on track, there's not much you can do if the role playing of it takes longer or if a combat takes longer than you expected. There's really not much you can do. Sometimes role playing games, you expect the players to come in, do something real quick and move on, and they will not. Sometimes you expect the players to spend a long time doing something and they will just blast through it.
Yeah, yeah. You and I had I mean, we don't talk about the show ahead of time, but Rodrigo basically the other night was, well, I've got this much planned and it just depends on whether you guys screw around the entire time or
whether we spend 24 hours looking down the well or not.
Yeah, I don't know if that episode has been released by the time we release this episode. So, spoiler alert, people. Hello, my name is Josh. I'm a big fan of the show. Orm is my favorite character on the show, but the rest are pretty awesome, too.
Hey.
My question develops from me being super impressed with Rodrigo's vocabulary in all different types of areas, from cave terminology to building terms and others. How does he do it?
Yes, smart dude.
He's a beast.
I guess I do it by having a pretty good vocabulary.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm just really educated.
I mean, it's true. I do it by being very educated. I'm a big nerd. I like to be able to express myself and finding specific things to say what I mean is important. So when I find out what those little shoulder pads that military people wear, I try to remember the name of them so that I can use it later. When I find out what a particular crystalline structure is called, I try to remember the name of it so I can use it later. And all of that stuff. Like, also, I tend to put in my games things that I know the name of.
That's true.
But not always, because you will note that Celestial Crusade had a lot of boats, which I know nothing about.
That's true.
No one could tell.
No.
It's okay. Because if you said starboard, that means nothing to anyone. They don't know what side of the boat.
Yeah, it's like everybody.
All
of us were on the left side of the boat.
Yeah, it's like people are just picturing it differently. Like in Rob's head, everybody's looking out the left side of the boat.
Yes.
In Steven's head, everybody's looking out the right side of the boat. what
Torx,
like
Torx dangling off the back.
I remember also in that thing. I got to the point where I was like, oh, I know the name of the city. And then I realized that I don't actually know how to pronounce that word, which was peonies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I suddenly realized that I actually didn't know how to pronounce peonies, even though I knew what they were.
It's actually pronounced penis.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, Matthew has a really incredible vocabulary, too. But Matthew, you read like an incredible amount as a kid.
But Matthew prefers to say the word penis.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what?
Matthew,
this is
also
the thing about language. There's something very important about language. There are times when you need to specify a taxonomic nomenclature, and there are times when you just say, yeah, it's that bastard over there. That is a tonal part of Rodrigo's game that I think we do very well. But I find the biggest problem is not having a big vocabulary in character.
Yeah, that's what I was going to point out. Matthew has to force his fairly extensive vocabulary through torque.
Yeah.
And I can just see my vocabulary diminish as I deal with my 7-year-old and my 3-year-old, because it's like you're trying to explain concepts to them that you would just say, well, you know, that is the molecular.
Yeah,
you know,
due to its molecular structure.
Yeah, due to the bonds and the covalent bonds.
Don't hold back. Both of my parents were chemical engineers. Yeah. And they would just talk to me like that.
And I try to do that with the oldest one, but when you're with the youngest one and you're trying to, you know, yeah. know what I mean is this and this, and it's pretty soon you're just
say Buckminster Fullerene. All right, just say Buckyballs.
This, Buckyballs. Carol writes in, this is nice from Carol. I would like to thank you guys and gal for recording Critical Hit. My friend told us about the podcast back when my partner and I started the move from 3.5 to 4E. Sadly, I did not start listening till after I was diagnosed with depression, triggered by systems from my PTSD resurfacing. You all have helped cut through uncaring moods and overbearing feelings of sadness and hopelessness. Also, thank you for taking questions and answering them maturely and thoughtfully. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Carol from Atlanta.
Wow.
Well, I'm glad that we can make people's lives better. That's why I like getting emails like this from Carol, or I love getting emails from our service members overseas who are stationed somewhere, and this is their connection back home. It bothers me, though, that you know there's that little wording at the end of all of your military emails that seems to indicate that other people have read this before it's gotten to us.
Sure.
But I really, really enjoy it. And again,
you didn't realize that then we turn around and put this on a podcast.
I know. But now it makes me wonder, you know.
They should be kept safe.
Fortunately or unfortunately, my current job has me dealing with the NSA at least once a year. Mm-hmm. And so that always becomes very uncomfortable with the things that we do. So it's kind of crazy to see those little warnings at the end.
That's read by a human.
I know.
a human reads that letter and approves it, okay?
Yes.
Which means...
Oh, yeah, that it's perfectly fine.
That means that someone probably didn't read it.
Yeah.
Is also the thing.
Yeah, whatever. Doesn't say his location.
Like,
doesn't say what she's doing.
Nerd.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Nerd.
He's sending a letter upstairs to the 4-star general or 5-star general. We must do something about the nerds in our ranks. Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra.
Potential recruit?
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, I mean, again, that goes back to what I said before. We really enjoy creating content because all the content that we create, whether you listen to all of it or not, it's important to somebody and is helping somebody through the day, whether it's Matthew and I arguing whether Star Wars is fantasy or sci-fi, which people really enjoyed, or whether we're talking about the good of the many outweigh the good of the few, or whether we're talking about whether 4E or 5E is better or whatever it is. So I'm glad people enjoy it. I really do. It makes doing this all the time very enjoyable. Hello, Critical Hitters and Brian.
Oh, come on.
Come on now.
That's cold.
I was wondering.
No, they're not saying he's not part of the group.
No,
he just doesn't.
He's never had a critical hit, is what they're saying.
Way to go, Charles.
Yes.
Way to go, Charles. We're now dismissing the rest of your email.
Oh, no. Read Charles'
email. Oh, he says, I was wondering if you have heard of Dungeon World, a new tabletop game that appears to focus more on storytelling. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, Brian's into it, but he's not going to answer now.
Yes.
Maybe Rob is glaring at me right now because I've been pestering him about this system for quite a while now.
A few weeks, at least. It's about two-thirds of our conversations at this point.
Because it's
you walk in the door, hey Rob, let me tell you what happened.
Check out this new playbook.
It's that and more. We're in the middle of a conversation, and he'll talk about that, and then go back into something else, and then talk about.
So, what do you think of it?
It looks very interesting. It's based off of Apocalypse World, written by Vincent Baker, the guy that wrote Dogs in the Vineyard. So, one of Rodrigo's.
Yeah.
Favorite games.
Okay, Dogs in the Vineyard, not about dogs in a vineyard.
Nope, not at all.
Metaphorically, it's about dogs in a vineyard.
Yeah, whatever. Yes. Whatever, liars.
That's a metaphor.
Sorry, yes, not actual dogs. Right. Although, Cat by John Wick is about cats. So, go find
that
one.
The Big Bang Theory is about explosions.
That should be.
Joseph writes in.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I don't know.
I think you like it, right?
I like it. It looks very interesting. It is far more narrative based. Like, there is no, like, all the target numbers are the same. It's just 2d6 plus your character stat, which ranges from -1 to +3, and you're always rolling to get a 7 through 9 or a 10 or better. Basically, those two each have a different threshold of what happens. And so, you know, it doesn't really matter what you're doing. If something's supposed to be more difficult, it's up to the GM to make it narratively more difficult, like make the players go through more steps to achieve something.
Right.
It's not rolling against a higher number.
Right.
So it's interesting things like that.
Okay. Joseph says, I run a 4E campaign with some friends almost weekly, and I have a really hard time making actually dangerous encounters. I have one character, a barbarian, who is built to do insane amounts of damage and be able to take a few hits, meanwhile having a counter for most any effect I put on him. I also have a player who is very content to watch what's happening in game and play as a quiet, aloof rogue who is built to have massive stealth but little effectiveness in combat. I usually drop monster HPs down to around 70% due to the length of the encounters and our limited session lengths. How do I build an encounter that can put the fear of GM into all of them without completely making the less min-max players feel useless?
Hike the HP back up to full.
To full, yeah.
Yeah. For one, I mean, that'll make your barbarian a little less terrifying.
So your barbarian, probably your rogue, even if he's not that effective as a rogue attacking from stealth, he's probably doing a fair amount of damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how the guy is built, but rogues have weapons with like tiny damage dice that it's just their sneak attack makes up for it.
Yeah.
Usually.
Supposed to.
Right. So yes, bring the HP back to
full.
I think the best way to do this is to throw a bunch of skirmishers at your party, because they have relatively low hit points but do a bucket of damage. So get your barbarian into a race. Yeah, he can take some hits, and yeah, he deals a ton of damage, but the other group is going to be exactly the same. So let's see who drops first, basically. So there's that. The other thing is, make sure that the encounters are at level to up to 3 levels above the party, and that's going to raise the difficulty significantly. The other thing is that even if you don't want to push it that far up, and I know that this lengthens the session and lengthens the combat, but if the opposition has numbers on the party, if there are more bad guys than party members, even if the enemies aren't as strong, they are going to have more opportunities to screw up with the characters. Lastly, you said that your barbarian has built himself to shrug off certain effects and stuff like that, so that doesn't help. Chances are, if he's picked up a feat that gets around every effect, he's not picking up feats that, I don't know, enhance his hit points or things like that. So just grab an artillery monster that he can't reach, mm-hmm, and just hit him as hard, mm-hmm, as possible.
You could also check on defenses. Make the defense, the barbarians, probably targeting AC.
Right.
The rogue is probably targeting AC, other than maybe one or two powers for each of them.
Right.
So find something that's got a ridiculous AC and lesser for the other defenses, letting the rest of the party be the ones that have to deal with that monster while the barbarian can't do a thing about it.
And conversely, check your own party's defenses. If you are attacking the barbarian on his fortitude or AC, you're probably not going to hurt him too much. So if he has a low will or reflex, depending on the build, have monsters that attack that, and that'll tick down his hit points a lot faster, mm, and make the combat a little bit more exciting.
Meg says, I know a lot of the times you guys do really long sessions. Mm. We do. We start probably around 7:30, mm, and we'll go until at least midnight, maybe a little bit after, depending. I mean, there's been times where we've been done at like 2, 3 in the morning.
Right.
When we do the same in my game group, I or other players start to get tired and fade off towards the end of the counter, typically just as the plot is supposed to be getting the most climactic. Do you have any tips for keeping your players engaged, or maybe speeding up the end of the session so they don't fade out on you, but without sacrificing story points in the process? We do get tired.
Not really.
I mean, if it's, you know, about the point where it's getting the most climactic, that's not a bad place to stop. That's a...
Yeah.
Good way to put a good cliffhanger and keep engagement till the next, mm-hmm, session.
Yeah, cliffhanger is not a bad thing. The other thing is, you know, think about if you have any control about when you start, try starting a little bit earlier so that people don't, mm-hmm, fade out as much. I'm not necessarily going to recommend caffeine or energy drinks, but if you guys are already drinking pop and stuff like that, then maybe hold off on it at the beginning and then start drinking it towards the middle so that it, you know, gets you through the session. You know, try to get a good night's sleep ahead of time, I guess.
Keep the lights on. Because there was one time where I turned off all the other lights, but the lights right above the table.
Yeah.
And about halfway through the session, Rodrigo was like, all right, all of you get up, stretch, do whatever you have to do, because you guys are all falling asleep.
Yep. And that's another thing is, you know, as a game master, you can stop the session, wake up any player that has fallen asleep. And I'm not going to lie, we've had people, I've watched people nod while we're playing Critical Hit. So I usually have to...
I have weird sleep cycles.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
During the last session, Rodrigo was like, Matthew. And I wasn't asleep,
but I was
in that state where I was not functioning.
My brain was off,
and it was like 1:30 in the morning. I actually had to call in sick the next day.
Adriana, is that a problem for you? Because, I mean, you're 2 hours difference from us.
Nope, I'm a jerk. I'm awake.
Because by the time we're done, it's midnight.
It's like a ridiculous time anyway, so I'm always like, yeah, we should just keep playing, guys.
But does the start time ever conflict with like your real world stuff?
I leave work early on the Wednesdays when I come do this. Luckily, people are completely understanding about it. And I have a nice job where no one's going to kill me for it. Sometimes I come, actually it's like the start of the game. I do get tired because, I'll be like really tired because I'll come here directly after work.
Right.
And a lot of times after work, I'm just like, I want to be dead forever. Yeah. And it's really important that I eat.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if these guys are eating when they're playing, but me and my other group, we always had dinner while we were doing it, which slowed things down. But you can do that, or you can have snacks. Like things like nuts are really good. Almonds are really good for keeping your energy up if you don't want to do like energy drinks. Like look into like high energy like snacks that help keep you awake and stuff like that. Try to like look at the time that you're setting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a better time where people will be more likely to be like conscious, or if there's like a time where if you can make sure everybody's eaten before they come to play, something like that. But I think snacks are a good idea, especially like doing almonds and maybe yogurt, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Protein drinks.
No heavy carbs, no breads.
And snacks give you something bagels. To do, and that helps.
Yeah. Not good for when you're trying to record a show, though.
No.
Yeah, so we don't eat while we're recording. Because
used to be a long time ago, when we first started this show, I had the ability to just take off work whenever I felt like it, kind of like some of you do. And Brian, were you still in school at the time when we first started? I know Rob was.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodrigo was fairly flexible as well. And Matthew, we kind of scheduled it around Matthew's day off.
Yeah.
And we would record from like 11 o'clock until 4:30, 5 o'clock during the daytime.
Yeah,
a.m.
Nice.
A.m.
Yeah.
And that made it a little bit easier. But now we're all got big boy jobs and big girl jobs. And we can't just
Normal size boy jobs.
Yes.
I have a big girl job and a big boy job.
There you go.
Michael writes in a bunch of questions. Can Rodrigo go over how he distributes treasure at each level?
Yes.
Nope.
Exactly as written in the
DMG,
except that now that I have 5 players, I give an additional treasure of the lowest level.
There you go. That's question 2. Has adding a 5th character changed the amount of treasure giving out at each level?
So technically, I'm not supposed to be doing that, but this is just kind of a high treasure game.
What is your opinion of the random treasure table in the back of the rules compendium?
Hate it.
Similar.
Indifferent.
Matthew?
I have no idea what that is.
Adriana?
I agree with Matthew.
Eleanor Cliff.
How do you calculate the attack bonus for Dancing Weapon? Do you use the proficiency bonus for the weapon or not?
I think so.
Yeah. God. I believe it's just like a weapon.
Yeah, it's just like a normal melee attack except using your brain.
Michael's fifth question actually is related to something that happened way in the future from when this letter was written, but now that we've read this letter on air, his question has already been answered in the show.
Amazing.
So,
nice.
What was the question?
Had to do with our good friend Thony.
Oh.
We, you know, right around February, we got a lot of questions from people saying, "Hey, what about Thony? What about Thony? Have you guys thought about Thony? What about what's going on with Thony? Thony,
why don't Thony, you try Thony, 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 Thony."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 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 Let's see. My name is Trey.
Hi, Trey.
Hi, Trey.
Now onto the question. I'm wanting to create a character for my roomies campaign, and I'm wanting my guy to be arcane and have powers that only do psychic, necrotic, and cold damage.
Hmm.
In y'all's opinion, what would be the best race class combo for that? Sincerely, Trey.
Warlock. Warlock does a lot of necrotic and psychic damage.
And cold.
And cold damage. So
yeah, Warlock's really good.
Star Pact Warlock is probably going to be your best bet.
And Star Pact has the most.
Star Pact's the mixed one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Tiefling, if you're going Warlock.
You can do a Star Pact Warlock that is one or the other, and then mix in powers from other stuff.
Yeah. So Star Pact Warlock and any race that gives you a bonus to con or charisma, depending on what you're looking for yes. What the powers you like best
for,
are.
For maximum effect, play a half-elf.
There you go.
My name is Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Oh, I'm from Australia.
G'day, Brian.
G'day, Brian. Okay.
You guys played that one perfectly.
I hate you all.
You guys played that perfectly.
Hey, it is day there.
Yeah. Team high five and a magic biscuit. I'm currently running a couple of 4th edition campaigns. I was wondering if you'd help me with my personal GMing issue of mine. I'm trying to write a story for a one-shot game. However, every idea I have turns into extended campaign. What's the best way you found to write games that are able to be completed in one session?
Make it simple. If those ideas that you keep having end up turning into campaigns, one thing you can do is just move the timetable forward. Instead of saying, okay, you guys are in a little town and eventually an evil overlord comes and you have to fight him and you have to go, and then climb up the mountain and down the other side of the mountain and go into the different dimension to fight him. Just start with, and you climb down the mountain and go into a different dimension to fight him. Start him there already. Just tell him, this is all you've been through already. Now this one shot. Think about TV shows, movies, and stuff that feel like one shots, where a character is kind of in a situation where there's kind of one imperative mission so that they can get back to what they normally do. You know, your characters are all trapped somewhere, or the characters have all been invited somewhere.
To the spooky mansion.
Yeah, that's kind of out of the way in some way.
Up on the hill. Theodore writes in and says, "Hey guys, just hit the episode where you added Trell to the party, and apparently that works something like getting a new doctor. At first you're not sure it's going to be okay, but after an episode or two, it's OMG, this is great.
Aww.
Keep up the great work from Theodore."
Yay. Oh, yay. Thanks.
Yay.
Don't tell anybody, Adriana, but you're my favorite.
Aww.
What? let's see. Trying to find one here. Some of these I'm going through. We get a lot of questions on how do I get people to role play. This one is, how do I get my gaming group of 13 to 15 year olds to role play?
Oh.
Guns to the head.
Good
I'm sorry.
Luck.
I'm sorry, cut that out.
Nope.
No.
Well, here's another one. How do I get this gaming group between 13 and 16 to role play? How do I get kids to put down the game controller and play my tabletop game and get into it?
Oh, well, you tell them to, and if they don't, you kick them out. I mean, like,
yeah, if.
I have yelled at full grown adults to stop looking at the internet, stop playing video games, and stop doing stuff while I'm trying to run a game that I prepared for them and that all their friends came over and sat down for. So you can do that. You can just tell people to put that stuff away. How do you get younger people to roleplay? The same way you get older people to roleplay. You incentivize roleplaying in the game. and, you know, make it clear that you can advance the story by role playing, and that will definitely help.
You could give them candy. They like candy, the kids.
Candy is good.
Yeah, children.
Just
children
don't use candy as any sort of in-game counter.
Yeah. Yeah, that we found that one out the hard way for two reasons. One, we shot through those TIE fighters way too quickly, and second, when we switched counters, we had to give the Heimlich to someone.
There you go.
Amazing.
If Carol's email mage tier up, here's one from Kayla.
Oh no.
Hey guys, I hope you've had a good week. I just wanted to write and say that listening to Critical Hit has helped me deal with an anxiety disorder. It helps me calm down and has really made a difference in the quality of my life at the moment. I seriously didn't think I could be as happy and calm as I am now. Thank you very much, Kayla.
Oh, nice. I'm really surprised. Hi, Kayla. I'm really surprised at the calming effect of Critical Hit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Okay. It stresses me way out.
A lot of you guys do have very calming voices.
I guess that's true.
I don't know that we do. I think we're terrible people.
We are terrible people.
The things
we say
don't
matter.
It's the tone.
Really.
It's like an ocean.
Brian, do not take that as a challenge.
Should we have Rodrigo do his sexy Spanish accent?
No sexy voice.
Do
I have
sexy
to
voice.
Soon.
No.
I cannot dream about Rodrigo again.
You can. You had a dream about him too?
Again,
it wasn't just me. Man,
I plugged tweaked audio in Spanish once.
Nice.
But I've been told actually that I have a very soothing voice as long as I'm not doing the Pope Mario voice.
Oh yeah, of course.
Or which is the dad voice.
That's the most soothing voice of all. That's like hello.
And I've said this before. I recruited Rob and Brian because of their personalities and their gaming experience and all that stuff. It never occurred to me that they both actually have very pleasing voices. So, and you know, they've both done customer service over the phone as well. So they have good like headset manner.
It's been a while. Maybe I need to get me a new customer service job to get back in.
Still hiring.
I was going to say, I know somebody who's working at a place that has a call center.
I want to use my dang vision plan. I got 10-year-old glasses. I should get those replaced.
Yeah, yes, you should. Maybe I should give you my glasses. We'll repair and see if those help you out.
Probably not.
Probably not with my eyes.
Ryan is blind. Next
episode. I am super blind as well. So.
Oh.
So maybe?
Maybe.
I have no idea what my prescription is.
Yeah. You know, Molly still tells the story of, remember that time we rode with Steven and he couldn't see anything?
Oh.
Yeah.
If they're 10 years old, you need to get a new prescription anyways.
Yeah, I know.
But I'll email you a site where I get
Don't you get that through your job that you have now?
We do now. Oh, just this year. Okay. I just, you know, monies.
Okay.
You remember where he works, right?
Yes, I know, but they've also got a discount eyeglasses place right there in the store. So.
Yeah, but we can't use that optometrist with the dang vision plan.
Really?
Yes.
Ah. How screwed up is that?
It's pretty screwed up.
You, if you think the Underdark is evil.
All right. Lee writes in and says, I've been looking through four ebooks and was curious as to what your thoughts are on pole arm builds. For the longest time, I've always had an infatuation with Lancer-themed characters foregoing the sword and board for a two-handed spear. However, it seems as if the majority of the fighter abilities only trigger with melee distance, not reach distance. Is a Lancer really a viable fighter build in 4E, or does it lose too much in the way of usefulness in favor of a giant poking device?
If a power says melee, you can do it at reach with a pole arm.
I played a pole arm character and I did like that.
There are strong pole arm builds for fighters and for warlords.
Fighters, warlords, barbarians have. Barbarians can make any weapon with reach brutal while raging.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which is beastly, especially since spike chain has reach.
Wow.
Yeah, 2d4, brutal 1.
Yeah, there are, for example, if you want to really extend the power of your halberd. If you play a dwarf with that feat that gives you a damage bonus to axes, which a halberd is, you're actually dealing a bucket of damage. Mm-hmm. And also have access to single-handed super-duper axes as well in case somebody decides to close on you. For example, the character that Steven played had a power that allowed you to take two attacks. If you have a character with reach, those two attacks can be Like, it, the power allowed him to attack, then move, then attack again, which, when you calculate in the reach, gives you a huge range to hit somebody with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Holly writes in and says, I have a question about your group's interpersonal opinions, and I'll try to keep this short as I can. I know Rodrigo said he usually doesn't allow or isn't comfortable letting people play opposite gender characters. Mm. How would you feel about a transgendered transsexual participant?
Play their gender.
Yeah, yeah, play whatever gender you are.
Or how would everyone else feel playing or DMing for a transgender person, as a more general question?
If someone has a problem with it, then you have a problem with them.
Yes.
They are the one with the problem.
I don't see it as a problem.
No,
it's just another person having fun
with
us.
Play with whatever gender that you feel like, dude.
I've actually been in a game where I DM'd, and we were in a game where the DM was a transgender individual, and one game where I believe there were actually two going in opposite directions. One was MTF and the other was FTM. And it doesn't matter, man. We're playing a game. At the time, I was an imaginary crystal woman from the planet Omicron 12.
Yeah.
You know.
If someone has a problem with, like, you being transgender and they don't have a problem playing a dragon, then that person's an idiot. Don't play with them.
I have experience with playing across gender lines, and while I appreciate, understand, and fully back Rodrigo's opinions on it, I have no problem and have had no problem with, you know, women playing male characters and playing female characters myself in the past. But again, different systems, different situations.
Well, and really the thing is, this is kind of two different questions.
Right, it is two different questions. Yeah. Because, one is allowing the person to play the character.
Because it's like, one of them is, are you okay with people playing a gender different than they are? Maybe yes, maybe not. But are you okay with having a transgender person in your game? Yeah. The answer is yes. Of course I'm okay with it. You know.
I think
you wouldn't want
to
be.
A question.
I mean, here's these people that are looking for group.
Yeah. Well, because people are weird.
I know.
And also, honestly, I think for us kind of being out on the internet all the time, we encounter a lot more groups like people who are transgendered, gay, lesbian, you know, queer people out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of interact with them differently than a lot of people who are not aware of their existence, not familiar with them. I mean, I've had just awful, awful interactions with people. There's this guy that I used to work with, and a lady that I also used to work for us, her daughter was transgendered, and she brought that up at work, and she was like, well, let me explain to you how it works. And this guy's response to it was like, oh, I know, I watch Springer.
Wow.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so it's like, but again, out there in the real world, that's kind of the response that a lot of people have. To us it seems weird, because we tend to be pretty accepting. And also, when you stop to think about it, there's like nothing. There's literally
nothing
wrong with
it. No, there's not. Matthew and I, when we went to school, one of the people in the theater was transgendered. She's a great person and love to have her at the table all the time. She was a really nice person. I'd welcome her anytime.
Sure.
One story that just sticks with me, and it hurts me so much. I worked in a call center for several years, and I left there in rage one afternoon. But one of the situations that kept occurring, there was a young lady who was literally 10 rows away, as far away from me as physically it was possible to be. She would come to my desk for assistance. And she told me one day the reason why, and she broke down in tears, because everybody else acted weird and uncomfortable. And when someone comes to my desk for help, I would say, yes, ma'am, or yes, sir. I would always say yes, ma'am to her. And that is why she would come to talk to me, because everybody else would be awkward and, you know, use the gender pronouns she didn't want to use. And I'm like, whatever you want to be that. I will respect that. That is perfectly fine. It's none of my business one way or the other.
It's called being polite.
Yes,
exactly. And nice.
And see, that's the thing
I call, like, any of you, like, something that you wouldn't want to be called unless I was, like, I don't know if you're really mad or something.
Like, which is reasonable because we're someone. Jerks.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, but we are like, terrible
that's,
people.
I think
it's like,
that's,
unless you're trying to start a fist fight with someone, like, why would you be so mean?
Well, but that's the thing that... so, again, on the internet, of course, the whole rape culture with women has reared its head again. And it, to me, it's baffling. And people are like, well, Steven, you're a guy. Of course, you don't understand this. But it's like, it's not... I don't think it's specifically gender issues. It's... Why can't we just be polite to one another? Even if we have a disagreement, why can't we be polite?
Well, that's a whole other question. You know, rape culture and gender norms transcend politeness. Right. Yeah. You can be a very polite bigot. The thing it goes way deeper than politeness. People,
I've seen Rodrigo play a very polite bigot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It was an awesome character.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was good times. But you like that stuff is deeper at a societal level, and part of the thing is part of the reason why people get surprised that, you know, we're kind of just okay with it is because most of the people around this table, or all the people around this table, are self-aware enough to the point where we were like, is it okay for gay people to be gay? Yeah. They're not bothering anything. Is it okay for transgender people to be transgender? Yeah, it doesn't change anything. How do I feel about black people? They're cool. You know, there's all this like terrible stuff going around that people are saying. But the moment that you take a step back and you say, is all that stuff true? You can take that moment say, well, people are just people. Right, and you should treat them politely and with respect. But a lot of people don't take that time. Society in general. Mm-hmm. Most people don't take that time to take that step back and say, you know, like every person has a legitimate claim to that happiness and to that kind of equality that everybody should enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And when people, you know, this is a frustration for me day over day, is when people say you belong to X group or you're one of X. And I'm like, no, I'm a Matthew. There are no other Matthews. There will probably never be another Matthew, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody else. But, you know, if someone comes to me and they say, well, I'm one of X people and this is how we act, I'm like, okay, that's great. That's fine for you. The next X person that I meet, I'm not going to assume that that is the norm for X, you know, type of people. The old story of, I always use the Muppet example of all rubberheads throw fish. But that's not the thing anymore. You can't think of all rubber heads, because if you're going to interact with a human being, no one is going to be exactly what you expect of their gender, their political group, their age, their whatever. Each person is an individual. If you don't treat them like that, I think you're shortchanging yourself more than anyone. But more importantly, you're being incredibly thoughtless and rude to those people.
Shan, Paul. Writes in.
Hello.
We're having a GURPS game where it's basically
Yay,
Call of
GURPS.
Cthulhu meets X-Files meets the GM's worst nightmare.
Nice.
So Delta Green.
Basically, he's got a character who just isn't playing character. And my question is, what is the methods that have worked best for any of you when dealing with someone who is extremely new to the world of paper and pencil RPGs that they have their RP out of character that far out of whack from what the character would actually do? You sit him down and say, Steven, let me explain how this game works to you.
We've run into that. It's like, how do you... What do you do when it seems like a player is not role-playing the character that they pitched you originally? And it kind of depends. Sometimes a player will pitch you a character, and then when they start playing it, the player realizes that they don't want to play the character as originally stated, or the character very rapidly starts to morph away from that. And in those cases, you just kind of have to let that happen and try to basically then as a game master, it's your job to like hold on to the seams of the game and prevent things from falling apart. Talk to the player. Make sure that they're aware that you're like trying to help them get the character to where they want. Now, sometimes what you get is a character or a player who wants to play the character in a certain way, but still have the reputation and consequences of playing it as originally pitched. So if your character is like you pitch to them a, let's go for D&D, you pitch them a paladin And he is a glowing paladin of Pelor, god of the sun, and does happy, fun time things exclusively. And then he is constantly lying to the party, is a jerk, steals money from other people because it's there and they're not looking at it. Hmm. He's basically playing the character in a different way. The way to deal with that is to have consequences show up and have the character deal with the actual actions of the character. And when the character and when the player turns to you and says, "But I'm a paladin," then you say, "But you're not acting like a paladin." So you, I mean, these are the consequences of the things you did. Don't do it as a punishment necessarily, but have the character deal with the consequences of the things they do.
Yep.
You know, it's the same thing the other way around. If you have, like, if they pitch you the roguiest rogue and who's the treasurer of the Rogues Guild, which has got to be the worst job.
Or the best.
Or the best job, depending on how you do it. That's the thing.
It's very short-lived,
yeah,
though.
Depending, yes. They are constantly having to vote on a new treasurer of the Thieves Guild.
Why can't we trust any of you?
Yeah, exactly. So if they pitch you that and then they proceed to basically play Captain America the whole time, there should be consequences to that too. People should start reacting to them like they're not a thief. You know, people should start reacting to them like they are Captain America. So it works in either direction. Have the world react to what the player is doing.
Yep.
Anybody else have a thought on that?
What he said.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty conclusive there.
Two more questions.
One.
I'm running a 4A campaign that started with four players, but the party's primary healer had to drop out for personal reasons. I've scaled the encounters accordingly, and there's still a warlord left in the party, but after a level 6 encounter nearly wiped them out, only the warlord actually went down, they're saying they don't have enough heal or heal powers and second winds. I've tried to compromise and offered them a battle standard of healing and a handful of healing potions, but my squeaky wheel isn't satisfied. How can I either A, balance things better, or B, explain to the squeaky wheel that what I've offered is fair and reasonable?
Give That's them a non-combative hireling what just has the heal powers?
I wouldn't even do that. I actually responded to this question over email.
Oh, yeah, because he sent it to both of us. Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, my response was, tell your squeaky wheel that battles are just going to have to be more exciting for a while until you get a new healer. If you have a warlord, that warlord enters the game with two heals per round or per combat. So that's plenty. Two heals, everybody gets a second win. That should be enough. If you say only the warlord actually went down, but you it's still succeeded, that's actually a successful combat.
That's pretty
that
exciting.
Happens, especially at low levels. Yeah. That's an exciting fight.
It is.
Your character should not just be rolling the enemies.
Yeah.
So at the I as a dungeon master consider a success if a fight at the end the players win and either everybody's bloodied or at least one person went down once. And if more than one person went down once, that's even better.
That's the Aurum Rivendor in theory.
Hey.
Knocked down, gets back
up
again.
Exciting fights.
Going down more than once.
I think hard fights are fun because we don't know if we're going to succeed or not. If we just go in and we're just mowing them down left and right, then that's no fun at all.
Right.
Which brings us to the last question, one that has popped up more than once over the last couple of weeks. How can you justify, as a DM, having a bunch of goblins take down our heroes that have taken down gods?
Hang on, I wrote something about
yes,
this.
Yes, you did.
A bunch of goblins.
I do want to go back to the
tumors.
While you're looking that up, I'll go back to the squeaky wheel. If, after you've explained that, you know, this should be good enough, he's still complaining, make the fights harder.
Okay.
Make the fights harder.
I kind of understand sad squeaky wheel because I'm the person that's like terrified the whole time during a fight, and like
that's a good thing.
I'm also like when I play a video game and like
oh I get
like
the same
RPG,
way too.
Like okay, when I play an RPG, I like carefully level up my character way past what they need to be to go into the dungeon. I carefully like have Link go through every blade of brass and get all the rupees and buy the weapon you're not supposed to have and like make sure all my Pokemon can just murder the duck. Because I'm terrified. I don't want anyone to die.
So not me. Like challenges are not for you.
Usually when I get to the final boss of a video game, I am throwing my shoes at him. Oh. Like I am just like I barely got there right when the thing opened because I didn't want to grind and I didn't want to do anything else. I'm just like, okay, if I can't finish the game at like level 16, then I'm not going to continue playing this game.
No, I grind forever. Yeah. I have an amazing team. We kill everything. I'm not putting up any of the Zubat crap. I'm just get out of my way.
That's what repels are for.
Who, me? I just usually just wander around until I'm already that level and hit all the random side quests just for the heck of it.
Yeah. All right. So I received a similar question, so I'm going to read the question that I got.
Right. Because, and I paraphrase because this is one that's come up. It's come up in the comment section. You received an email. I received at least two emails about this.
I saw it on Twitter.
I saw it on Twitter. Right. That was another place.
So here's the question. How do you handle /explain the idea of encountering increasingly more powerful foes, even when it doesn't make much sense logically? For example, in the critical hit world, the palace guards, as well as the king and queen, were paragon level in terms of combat strength. It seems like they could have handled the moon threat rather easily, almost trivially. Did they get stronger since then? Or is it just a, quote, don't worry how the sausage is made, unquote, situation in a combat-oriented game? A colorful metaphor.
The one that I received was specifically about how do the goblins take down people who have taken down the white gods.
So here's my response, and I'm going to read this because I've already written it out. So we've gotten several iterations of this question and have been meaning to answer, but we haven't done a mailbag in a long time.
Hey, mailbag episode.
Mailbag episode.
Hooray.
So I'll talk about it here, and I talk about it on Tumblr as well. So the idea that Trell and the Nearly Dead Men are too powerful for palace guards and goblins to pose a threat to them is an artifact of the game system. In D&D 4th edition, characters get more hit points, more accuracy, and more damaging powers as they increase in level. This is because D&D as a system capitalizes on the write-down euphoria-inducing joy of advancement. The more you play, the more powerful your character gets, the more options she has, and the more cool things she can do. The issue with that system is that it allows you to strictly quantify a character's power, something that is not an issue in other forms of entertainment. You know in your head that human guards should not be level 16. You also know that more than likely the last giant god monster they fought was probably level 11 at most. But those are just levels based on where the party is at the time. Where my games are concerned, rather than thinking of a level 13 monster, you'd be better off thinking of it as a challenging monster. So if the characters met more golden kind today, for example, they'd have a serious level boost because they're meant to be challenging. Let's use an example from a recent, as of this recording, movie extravaganza, Captain America, The Winter Soldier. It's not going to be too spoilery because the example's in the trailers. So there's that cool scene where Captain America is in an elevator full of bad guys, right? And they all try to fight him. By strict D&D logic, Captain America should have beaten them immediately. In that last movie he was fighting hyper-advanced alien soldiers and space eels. The elevator guys shouldn't have been able to touch his AC, especially with a masterwork shield. So why did he struggle to beat up a bunch of mundane soldiers? Because that's actually how things work, both in the real world and in most fiction. A soldier that has served several tours can still get hurt by an untrained civilian with a gun. James Bond's been in 30 movies, but bullets don't ricochet off his skin. Think of any of the guys in Game of Thrones who were badasses in the Mad King's War. How are they doing nowadays? D&D creates a very specific framework of how the universe works, one that often, as a game master, you have to shove under the rug for the purposes of story. So yes, strictly looking at levels and attack bonuses, the Diamond Throne royal family could roll the thing that shatters the sky in its weakened form. But story-wise, they could not, even though they're total badasses. Action stories need to come back down sometimes. Although we all know examples of stories that just keep getting crazier and crazier in power level, that's not a good fit for some or even most pieces. So Captain America powers back down to fight soldiers, the Power Rangers go back to fighting putties, and Torque and the Torkeltones go back to chopping mundane soldiers in half. Hope that made sense. Thanks for listening, and thanks for writing it.
Yep, good answer. I hope that answers everybody's question.
I hope so, too.
Because I guess I never think of it that way. I'm just like, well...
Well, and you see that.
We were lucky.
All the time.
I mean, right? I mean, you see the thing where it's this team is supposed to be the number one team of take the March Madness this past year.
Right.
KU went in at number four, and they went out in like the first or second round.
Right.
And Wichita State did the same thing. And it was just like, oh my God, how could these people who are supposed to be so great get defeated by these people over here who are ranked a lot lower?
Right, right.
And it happens all the time.
Gonna say both Gamblers? The teams in the championship were in the like mid.
Yeah, oh, yeah, they blew everybody's.
Oh, like, are you talking of sports?
Yeah, we're talking sports. But
they are talking of sports.
We're not probably talking about it very well, but yes, we are talking about that as a metaphor.
Yeah, I mean, and you...
Let me put it in a non-sports realm. Yeah. You know how Thank the you. Undertaker Please. Was unbeaten for 21 years?
That is a sport.
No. Wrestling
that
is not
sports
a sport.
Entertainment.
They wear sweaty clothes.
I actually, Matthew,
I'm wearing sweaty clothes.
I almost,
not a lot of sweaty clothes.
I almost used that example in this as well, but I was like, well, we'll just do Captain America because
yeah,
I'm
something
a little bit
that
more familiar
yeah.
with it. But yeah, yeah, I mean, The Undertaker, like, I had actually written this out. The Undertaker has been around since 1983 or something
nice.
Like that.
Yeah.
Has been wrestling since 1983. Brock Lesnar has been wrestling since the 2000s. So it's like, by strict D&D rules, he should not have beaten him, but he did because yeah. that's what either somebody wrote or what the way the chips fell down, depending on what you believe. and yeah, absolutely.
He was robbed, man.
Most importantly, some of the guys that the Undertaker beat during his streak had already beaten Brock Lesnar previously.
Right,
that
exactly.
That doesn't affect the logic of the match, and it should. I think affect the logic of the match because at that point, essentially, we're no longer telling a story; we're just ranking.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a different podcast.
I used to play City of Heroes, and one of like once you got to like level 20 or something like that, you went to a new area, and one of the things that happened in that area is that there's a prison break, so it's just like inmates just like pouring out of this prison, and you basically have to go beat them up and put them back in prison, and it's like. But I've fought aliens already. You know, it's like I've fought like kaiju by this point. So now I'm back to fighting prisoners. And the idea is not that your character just continues to get more powerful. Is that this is the story. This is the story in which your little superhero guy goes and fights convicts and tries to basically herd a bunch of convicts back into jail.
Here, let me put it in a term that everyone can understand regardless.
Right.
You know how Batman...
Get out.
Speaking of getting out, I think that wraps it up for this installment of Critical Hit. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing this podcast with a friend. We really do appreciate those of you that are sharing this and spreading the good word about Major Spoilers. And very special thanks to everyone who is a recurring donor through our members.majorspoilers.vip site. Hopefully you're finding our monthly live chats, our bonus tracks, all the other stuff that you get over there enjoyable and even more worth your time than the stuff that you're getting for free each and every week. If you want to follow D&D Brian, you can follow him at D&D Brian. Let's spell it out, Brian, because I know people are just going to be confused.
Letter D, letter N, letter D, B-R-I-A-N. No spaces, no underscores, nothing like that.
Then we also have Boar Immortal, which is Rob. Go ahead and spell it out, Rob.
B-O-R-I-M-M-O-R-T-A-L.
Okay. Rodrigo, people can find you at
Fearsome Critter.
And they can also find you on Tumblr.
Yeah, which is Magic Turtle, all one word. Tumblr.com.
It's might as well spell Tumblr.
T-U-M-B-L-R.
Some people don't know that.
Adriana, people can follow you at
Miss Very Very.
And on Tumblr at
Miss
Very Very.
All right. And Matthew.
That's going to be consistent across your brand.
You are absolutely correct. Matthew.
At Mighty, that's M-I-G-H-T-Y, King, K-I-N. G Cobra C O B R A. Don't follow underscore Mighty / Mighty King Cobra because I think she's a Welsh cam model. Ooh. But Mighty King Cobra, all one word, capitalize the letters.
Also, don't search for Trell on Tumblr.
Oh dear God, no!
You can follow me at Major Spoilers, and of course, you can visit majorspoilers.com. And if you have a question, podcast@majorspoilers.com. We will talk with you real soon, and until then, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.